I suppose that I should say that when I was asked to present this paper, I felt a little bit the way Professor Chambers did, wondering what the philosopher was supposed to have to say about the future. Philosophers, like historians, have quite often done a lot of analyses of the past and done a lot of abstract speculation and are not generally considered to be the type of people you might consult if you were trying to figure out what was going to happen in the future. However, I do think that there are lots of ways in which the philosopher can help us take a look at the future, not only by helping us analyze where we have been, where we are right now, but to help us get a look at where we might like to be. I would say that Professor Chambers' discussion of our perceptions or our basic values could just as well be termed our basic concepts, some of the basic concepts with which we view the world. And that, too, is what I would like to talk about. I'd like to take a look at ourselves and where we are in a little broader context, more in the context of a kind of the basic cultural attitudes of today, take a look at where that might be leading us, ask ourselves whether we would like to be led in that particular way, and finally close with some remarks about what we might do ourselves about analyzing our own concepts and our own attitudes in terms of having something to say about shaping the future. You might realize, if you've ever taken a course in contemporary philosophy, that there are many, many philosophies of this century. The most common are the positivism and analysis known in the English-speaking world, but you also can study American pragmatism, European existentialism, phenomenology, Marxism, not to mention the various Eastern philosophies. What I'd like to point out is the fact that different academic philosophies abound, each with their own groups of adherents, is probably not as significant as the cultural attitudes they express. There are three basically different cultural attitudes I see as evidenced by today's philosophies. The first would be an emphasis on the empirical, the material, and the pragmatic. And this would certainly be seen in looking at pragmatism, positivism, language analysis, phenomenology, and even Marxism when viewed in a certain light. Secondly, another very different attitude would be the trend toward escape from this world, immersion in the cosmos, and the inward search for meaning of the Eastern philosophies. And finally, the focus on the dilemma of being thrust into the absurd universe of the existentialists. What seems to be lacking, I might point out, is a sound philosophy which places positive value on the human person and his ability to learn, grow, influence his environment, remain sane, and achieve a degree of personal integration. Noting these basic trends in philosophy should not be surprising if we believe what philosophers of history have told us when they tell us that there are three standard cultural phases, each of which has its own system of truth. And this is why the philosopher would be looking at this, not only the whole cultural attitude, but how does this express itself in systems of truth, or what we might say systems of philosophy. The first and earliest is called ideational and is characterized as transcendental, religious, absolute, symbolic, and so forth. The second, named integrated or idealistic, is considered more mature, and its subject matter is termed heroic, noble, uplifting, moralistic, and so on. And usually the medieval Renaissance period is classified as an integrated period or providing an integrated system of truth. The third, finally, is variously described as sensate or humanistic secular. In this stage, art and philosophy tend to be empirical, secular, pragmatic, utilitarian, hedonistic. It seems clear that the pragmatic materialistic philosophies mentioned above could be considered diverse manifestations of sensate tendencies. The Eastern philosophies, insofar as they can be classified, are possibly ideational. And the nihilistic tendencies of the existentialists point to what are described as late sensate characteristics. Integrated philosophies are conspicuously lacking. All theorists agree that we in the Western world have for some 7 or 8 centuries been involved in a sensate trend, which now seems to have covered the whole world. Whether it will continue into a late sensate degraded form or be replaced by something else is a question for us to think about today. We might contrast our contemporary Western philosophies with their predecessors by looking at the kinds of questions they are concerned with. Where the Greeks focused on man's rationality and attempts to achieve wisdom and virtue, contemporary philosophers, for the most part, circumscribe their areas of inquiry, are concerned with the meaning of propositions rather than the meaning of life, and are suspicious of talk about values, ethics, and theology. A very cogent description of the basic differences between the ideational and the sensate cultures is given by John Dewey in his Quest for Certainty. This book, by the way, was written in 1929, but it still exemplifies the point I'm trying to make, where he rejects the Greek ideal characterized by almost the same qualities as those mentioned before as ideational, in favor of the pragmatic one, and refers to it as a move from theory to practice. The effects of these attitudes and concepts is felt, of course, in the area of ethics. Man is no longer viewed as a rational seeker of good or of virtue, but as an often irrational creature with no clearly defined goals. Whether or not there can be ethical standards is disputed. The emphasis is on the individual, very much responding to Professor Chambers' comments about personalism or individualism, and the situation. And the only criterion for right action is often the feelings of the person involved. Thus, ethics, if treated at all, becomes an empirical enterprise. Most philosophers do not discuss normative ethics at all. Normative ethics meaning systems of ethics or systems which would embody ethical standards. The emphasis is on personal freedom and choice. There's often a lack of personal reflection, as we've seen on the public scene, by adherence to higher superiors and a corresponding lack of responsibility for one's own actions. I'm simply saying these things as examples of the fact that we definitely are part of a sensate culture, and the tendencies are very evident. Along with examples of sensate tendencies in our culture, there are also evidences of uneasiness with them. Existentialism is a case in point. On the one hand, it revolts against the rationalistic scientific philosophies and tries to ask questions about the meaning of life. On the other hand, because for the most part it emphasizes absurdity and meaninglessness, it frustrates that same attempt to find meaning. Emphasizing protest and revolt, it seems already to have moved beyond the sensate phase. Another attempt to escape our sensate culture is made by those who flock to the gurus of the East and study their utterances, which, enigmatic though they may be, still seem more profound than Western analysis. The Eastern philosophies seem to offer a framework in which to understand or get a hold on one's life. The current flourishing state of fundamentalist religions may be another example of the same tendency. Not all Americans wish to espouse the values of an affluent, work-oriented, achievement-oriented society. Many drop out for various reasons, and in countercultural modes of life try to preserve their own values. Often these lifestyles reveal a search for community, for a sharing of values and convictions which are not universally respected. In other words, they're not part of the basic paradigm that we are operating with today. The philosophical community's disinterest in ethics is not shared by the general public. Questions raised by evidences of political wrongdoing, the behavior of some of our large corporations, and results of recent medical research have sensitized our consciousness to ethical issues. Businesses are advertising for experts in professional ethics. But our newly aroused moral sensitivities do not in themselves give us any sense of direction. The ethical traditions of the past were generally received as part of an authoritative religious teaching. With the anti-authoritarian attitudes of today, there is fairly general acceptance of the notion that people must reach their own ethical decisions. On what grounds are they to make them? The secularized culture offers little help. It seems that an entire reassessment of our values is called for. This examination of values and search for meaning, which evidence a disillusionment with our predominantly sensate culture, may be the very tendencies that move us beyond it. Now, if we are to move beyond sensate culture, where do we go then? It may seem that from the three basic cultural attitudes I described, that we've now completed three out of three, and so then you begin to wonder where you go from there. Our increasingly sensate culture could go in a number of directions. It could evolve along sensate lines into a later sensate form. It could reverse itself and become a new ideational or idealistic culture. Or it could become a pole against which is projected a counter movement, which of course would bring about a conflict over concepts and values. Let me say a few words about late sensate systems of truth. Late sensate systems of truth are characterized as cynical, nihilistic, atheistic, alienated, meaningless. Surely we have already seen some evidences of them in the writings of certain contemporary existentialists or anarchists. It is possible that high culture would become late sensate in character, although late sensate culture today is still restricted to small minorities. Will it become the dominant cultural attitude of the next 25 years? Implications for philosophy, art, and values do not seem particularly appealing. Another possibility might be a smooth transition from sensate characteristics to a new idealism, arising out of dissatisfaction with present cultural tendencies and a need for heroism, nobility, and so on. The sort of worship accorded to John F. Kennedy and the hatred generated by Richard Nixon might be evidences of this. A really smooth transition would seem unlikely, however, given our current adherence to materialism, affluence, and the secular. It would probably be too difficult to abandon some of our current values. A third possibility, and one for which we already have some evidence, is that the trend toward the later sensate would produce a polarization within society. On the one hand, the hedonistic, alienated elements typical of the late sensate culture, and on the other, a violent reaction to them in terms of idealism, heroism, charismatic leadership, or religion. The resulting conflict in terms of ideas and values would be a powerful one. The battle would be waged not only over values, but over concepts. Which is the better way of thinking about things? Which is the better way of describing or looking at the world? Most 19th and 20th century philosophers of history believe that some new kind of religious stage will follow the termination of sensate culture. However, the birth of the new religion, or as I would prefer to call it, integrated philosophy, will be a more or less painful process following a period of chaos, anarchy, and irrationality. Their projections would suggest that the polarization will issue in a move away from late sensate tendencies to a new ideational system or a new or renewed philosophy. Of the three possibilities I've just outlined, it seems that the last is most likely. That is, the trend toward late sensate culture continues, but produces enough dissatisfaction to generate a counter-movement. This movement, of course, must come from within the philosophical and artistic community, as well as from the dissatisfied public. I think you have a question here of who influences whom, and I think in this situation you'd probably have both influencing both, although that might not be a very satisfactory answer, but the philosophical and artistic community influencing the general public bringing forth new movements in the philosophical and artistic community. Its popularity will depend not only upon gaining adherence in the cultural community, but also upon the degree of dissatisfaction and the personal aspirations of the public. Are we really looking for the heroic, the noble, and the ideal? Or must our culture provide yet less for our needs in terms of meaning and purpose before we find ourselves looking for something else? Now, all of this has presented a rather global perspective. We might want to ask ourselves specifically what might happen in the United States. And of course, we could try to narrow that down to what might happen here. Although I expect that the polarization and ensuing new philosophy or ethics will come, I cannot project that it will necessarily happen during the next 25 years. It's maybe a much longer process if we have to go through the period of disintegration and rebuilding. However, I think that we can still look at this as a projection for the future and then look at where we are likely to be in the next few years. Presently, the alienation in our society seems to be balanced by affluence. I understand, however, that we're being told that we should consider ourselves a decreasingly affluent society, in which case this would probably have a rather profound effect on the way we reevaluate our position. New philosophical movements in the United States are not developing at much of a rate. To be sure, there is a dissatisfaction with language analysis in the philosophical community, just as physicists are wondering what will replace quantum mechanics. On the continent, however, Marxism has become the predominant philosophy of university students. Is its popularity explained because of its appeal to those who want to change the society, who look to it as a new theoretical framework, which, however, has very practical implications? Does it appeal to the instinct for the noble and the heroic so lacking in other philosophies? Is Marxism going to be the bridge to the new philosophies? Might it itself become the religion of the future? Well, for political and historical reasons, the association between Marxism and communism and our United States experience with them does not seem to me very likely that Marxism will become the predominant philosophy in America. Furthermore, it is definitely a sensate philosophy and lacks certain essential characteristics of the ideational systems of truth, namely all of the spiritual and unworldly elements. I see its popularity as a symptom of the cultural situation of the Western world rather than as the wave of the future. What I would like to suggest rather are what I think might become the elements of a new integrated philosophy or religion. The basic emphasis would be on the human person as good, as able to strive after ideals, as having some sense of self-direction in life. Would such a conception of oneself alter one's attitudes toward science and technology? We've been told that our conception of ourselves and our vision of the universe have been basically technological. And then we constantly see ourselves as trying to react to a technological culture. What difference would it make if we had a more positive notion of ourselves rather than simply as seeing ourselves over against technological progress? Would human beings feel more able to assert themselves and less as victims of the computerized age? It seems that an improved self-image would go a long way toward helping us cope with the world we live in. This notion of the human person, as I see it, would include the following characteristics: emphasis on the spiritual and transcendent, and interrelational ethics, awareness of human capabilities, solidarity of the human race. Unrealistic as these may sound today, these notions, I suggest, would emerge after the breakdown of many of our current conceptions. I might add that there are some evidences of their existence in certain subcultures already. Let's take a look at each of them briefly. Emphasis on the spiritual is a reaction to a materialism that wants to make the human person the sum total of bodily parts, and that views the entire universe in terms of its material components. The popularity of the Eastern philosophies is a strong indication that the materialistic view of the human person is simply inadequate, even for the Western mind. The fact that philosophers are uncomfortable in speaking about mind, soul, and the transcendent does not mean that these words cannot refer to something that human beings want recognized as part of themselves. The element of the transcendent or spiritual in art, music, and so on needs to be reaffirmed. The difference between this emphasis on the spiritual and that of older philosophies is that the latter saw man's spirituality mainly in terms of the salvation of his soul. This view sees spirituality essentially as that power the human person has to transcend himself, to transcend the materialistic, even to see the spiritual in the material universe. The new philosophy would include recognizing the transcendent in oneself, in others, in the world. In other words, it would be both an incarnational and a transcendent idea. Man's capability to relate to a transcendent God would be included under this heading. Current ecumenical trends in religion indicate that the common experience of the transcendent crosses over institutional boundaries. A blending of Eastern and Western thought will probably produce new religions. Religiousness could become a predominant characteristic of the human person. In the area of ethics, the broader view would also prevail. Some philosophers predict a return to Hellenic or Greek or older European ideals, which paid attention to honesty, virtue, and altruism. The reaction to the selfish pursuit of power and prestige with disregard for moral standards will produce a demand for honesty, already evident from public response to Watergate and related situations. The softness produced by affluence and a hedonistic culture will be countered by a new interest in virtue and moral strength. Concern for others, rather than simply for oneself, is a natural outcome of philosophies that stress interrelatedness rather than isolation. This is a kind of direct opposite pole to the whole notion of individualism, which we were discussing before. One characteristic already very evident in our culture is that individuals cannot be seen as isolated. Work is done by groups and teams. Interaction is the emphasis. Whether we are speaking of job, home life, or society, more and more we understand the human person only in a relational context. Any moral theory of the future would have to recognize this. Emphasis on the individual in ethics will be part of a healthy respect for the self, but the individual, seeing himself in relation to others, will have a different perspective on his own actions than he would were he simply to view himself as alone in the face of an alien world. The emphasis on human capabilities is related to the search for meaning or purpose, often mentioned as a characteristic of the late 20th century. If we see no meaning or purpose in our lives, then what is there to direct our energies toward? We seem to have despaired of our abilities to do anything about the fast-changing face of our universe. In a word, we have lost our belief in ourselves and consequently in each other. Strengthening that belief in ourselves should enliven our awareness of our human capabilities. Our potential to transcend and transform our lives needs to be tapped. William James, a philosopher psychologist, estimated that we seldom operate at more than 10% of our capacity, and other studies seem to have confirmed this. What would be our achievements, and I don't mean just our material achievements, if we bent all our energies toward what we considered meaningful and purposeful activity? I suggest that new energies which provided that meaning and purpose would give new impetus toward using that potential. In using his potential, man would discover new and admirable things about himself. The effect then would spiral. Finally, given the tendency of our world to become smaller through communications and technology, a heightened awareness of human beings everywhere, and the pervasiveness of the common culture of the future, It would seem that a sense of solidarity with the rest of the world is inevitable. Perhaps a commonly held conception of man will evolve and give life to numerous efforts at international communication. I don't say man because I mean just man, but of course I mean human, or man and woman. This conception of the human being, as described above, will include elements of both Eastern and Western traditions, and thus strike a responsive chord in many places. Awareness of solidarity, coupled with the attitude of altruism, should help to unify the world yet further. Now, I realize that all of these ideas sound extremely idealistic. You are probably expecting me now to go on to some sort of international community with the termination of wars, selfishness, and greed, in other words, a utopia. But of course, that is not what I am trying to do. I'm not so much interested in our changing the world into a utopia, which will never happen, but rather in looking at a philosophy which can forge out a concept of the human person, which will provide meaning for those who cannot find answers in today's world. And the point I'm trying to make is that as our sensate culture has affected our concepts of what science is and what philosophy is, it has profoundly affected our notion of who the human person is. I am suggesting that a new concept of man, which is positive and integrated, is not only necessary to our present age, but can provide the foundation for the philosophy of the future. Now, I'd like to make a few comments about the idea of developing a new concept, because it's one thing to say it should be done, it's quite another thing to ask yourself how you could ever do anything like this, or how we as individuals would have anything to offer in this respect. Referring to a concept of the human person can mean a number of things. According to the Aristotelian notion, a concept expresses a definition. Grasping it means understanding the essence of something. Contemporary philosophers understand grasping a concept to mean an understanding, not necessarily explicit, of something, which allows one to act in certain ways. The understanding is revealed by one's language and behavior. I would like to make use of both of these meanings. I think that it is necessary to consider the characteristics of a notion of the person, though not necessary to designate an essence. However, I also believe that the attitudes we reveal in our behavior toward ourselves and others implicitly contain our concept of the human person. It seems that some hard reflection is necessary to make some of these attitudes explicit. Having become conscious of attitudes, it is then our task to evaluate them and see if they express what we say we value about the human being. If they do not, we must project the attitudes we would like to have, thereby revealing different concepts. It is in this comparison of concepts that we begin to forge out our own explicit concept. In the event that we find concepts inadequate, that is, our behavior and language expressing concepts we do not wish to subscribe to, we can shape our own ideas by consciously developing different modes of thought and expression. Typically, we do not think of ourselves as having any insight in this regard. We look to professionals, philosophers, theologians, scientists, and so on, to give us concepts of the human person. It is true that they may have a more developed theoretical basis for their ideas, but their notions will not be acceptable unless they can be related to common experience. One very powerful effect of the move from rationalism to empiricism is precisely this demand. No new idea that seems simply rationalistic and abstract will be accepted at face value. Something in our experience must verify it. Not only must our experience verify the concepts initially, but the concepts must show themselves to be fruitful ones in our lives. They must provide grounds for communication with other human beings and a basis for making some of one's own decisions. We have more knowledge now about our complex human selves than we have ever had before. Scientists and psychologists have put forward elaborate theories regarding man and his activities. Though their concepts of the person may be judged deficient on our analysis, the information they give us cannot be ignored. We must evaluate it too, along with its conceptual framework, to integrate what is useful into our own concepts. It is a matter of historical fact that new ideas often emerge simultaneously in various parts of the world. I am suggesting that the time is ripe for a new concept of the person. Whether the concept is eventually articulated by some existing or older traditional philosophy or religion, by new charismatic leadership, by some other means, or by some combination of these, is not our concern here. Our concern is to assess our own attitudes and values and to bring about, as far as we are able, a healthy and positive concept. insofar as we enter into reflection, evaluation, and criticism of our own and others' ideas, and use these results to shape our language and behavior, we too are part of planning the future society, perhaps of planning the most essential part of that future society. And I might simply add as a kind of a footnote that trying to evaluate what our concepts are, what our basic attitudes are, will be the task of the workshop that we will have to follow up this particular aspect of Metro 2000, to give us a kind of practical way of looking at our basic attitudes and what we might like them to be.
Thank you. It's now 2:05, and we'll recess.